Russ, if you would unmute yourself and allow us to answer your question.
Thank you, Master Michael. Two things you've brought up before in the past, the accumulation of stuff and things. That's a really good reminder because I'm going through my house now, dumping stuff out and going through boxes and not minimizing my life, but that's a real good recharge. And I've got two good buddies, long-term buddies, that are also struggling in that. And it that you coined it very well. It's like a weight. And when that stuff is gone, not only do you have more room in your closet, your garage, or whatever, something that's sitting in a box for 5 years doesn't do you any good anymore. So that's a wonderful reminder. The second commentary is artificial intelligence. I was deep in the tech business and industry for a long time. I'm seeing exactly what you're portraying. It's not necessarily the dumbing down of brains, but it's the dependency that younger people are doing, even older people are doing, to become more fashionable, more competitive in their jobs and in their industry instead of using the brain power that they have. Because one day there's not going to be electricity and the computer won't work. And you've got to find your way back to the hotel or you've got to find a way to the gas station. I have many close friends here now in the last 3 years that are in the 40s to 55-year-old. And without almost exception, they get in the car and say, well, the GPS will tell me where to go. And I don't know, all of you have probably used it, but the GPS takes you down the freeway that's loaded with 30,000 cars here in Denver on 25 and 70. That's not the best way. The best way is to go around that stupid shit. But if you listen to the phone, that's all the phone is going to do is to tell you the most immediate or quickest route, not necessarily the most efficient or brainless way. And I can't tell you how many times while I was doing real estate in my work in Sacramento years ago, I had to memorize the routes, the neighborhoods, the type of streets and where they were. There wasn't even a second thought that I was going to go look at my flip phone back then. I always carried a map book, but when I tutor math now with kids, we have at least a portion of the section where the kids have to do their problems on their sheet without any side scratching. They have to do all the work in their head.
And from that, was that the end of your comment, Russ?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We see Janaya, your hand up next. All those points complement everything we were saying. In addition to the fact you mentioned the GPS and we did not, it is really important for the human animal body to know how to orient in three-dimensional space. And one of the things about automobiles and now with GPS, it's like it's so funny. Real life mirrors the simulation more than the simulation mirrors real life. And so things of that nature that you're talking about is really key for human understanding and human survival, let alone knowing your way around a city, but also feeling the geography of a city, feeling the sense of place that one is in, rather than pretending that it's some kind of pretend space spacecraft or that they're hurtling through and that sort of thing. So yes, we concur with a lot of that. Janaya, you had your hand up and you wanted to make another comment or
Thank
ask
you.
a
I
question.
searched all over for the hand thing and couldn't find it, so we'll have to work on that on another time. So I'll give you
That's
the
fine.
real one, a
See
human
the
thing, not a
manual.
piece of AI,
That's
not a
right.
piece of
It's
computer,
manual.
not
You
a piece
used
of
That's right. And you raised your arms and worked your muscles. And
Do it, do it. I'm thanking Russ for the comments. It strikes me that we are invited to do both. When I go to the city of San Francisco, I'm extremely grateful for that GPS who can find its way through in the moment when they block streets, etc., which I cannot do. There's enough stress driving, just paying attention to all of the stimulus, to not have to pull aside and get my paper map out. But I am also building a mental map as I go, so that the brain is also working to remain oriented. So thank you for that, Russ. I was in tech also. Ivan Illich told us, 100 years ago or thereabouts, that if we give our lives over to the machine, we will become machines.
Yep.
And that's part of what we are seeing with our younger generations, especially. That dependency, and also, as you say, when you have to go through a menu tree, you are following what the programmers believed, or the user interface designers believe you need to know. And almost always it's something, I want something different that you don't have listed. So a little piece on that. Thank you. I also want to say, I appreciate Russ's comment about getting rid of stuff. I am still in the midst of getting rid of clearing stuff from my dear friend who died 2 years ago, which has been both a burden and a joy. He saved a great deal of his correspondence and has given me a chance to connect with some of his friends that I knew, some I didn't know, to return that to them. And I'm also in the process of taking some of the old videotapes and pre-videotapes that we had in the 20s and converting them so they're on computer. My partner has moderate Alzheimer's, so part of my goal in doing that is to be able to have her remember things that are gone from memory right now. I feel that incredible burden of stuff that we've accumulated, and I feel like it could be a whole other seminar to say, where are you getting rid of stuff? Because I am loath to throw away things that still have life in them. So that's a different discussion. That's a different group, but I'd be love to have ideas in that realm of who, I'm getting helpers to help me pass things on. And the last thing is, I really love that notion of what have I not done in this life that I want to be active and healthy to do? You could call it the bucket list. You could call it just what I haven't explored, that risk taking, including nice relationships at this era with more mature people. It's really a treat. So there's a few things I just wanted to toss out to the whole group.
Thank you, Jeanette. We want to just comment on a couple of things. First of all, every time that a technology is used to empower or expand human potential, it's wonderful. It's not that we're putting this in a bad, good category. What we are showing or talking to are the are some of the categories and trends that we've been seeing how humans, you cited, Ivan Illich, the theologian, there is a notion of you using the machine, and what you're seeing more of is machines are using us. And why that's significant is simply because it's also, we become the automaton and we lose consciousness. And of course, for the mature soul era to move forward in real terms, what that means is we have to take back control of all these systems we have let go onto automatic. And if people aren't aware that these systems are operating already on automatic or largely on automatic, then we're participating with them and perpetuating them. And that's one of the key issues here. What you're doing with your, changing medias and going through things actively as a way of sorting is wonderful. The only part that we did not mention as part of the last commentary was the fact that you are all going to see that economic models are going to shift such that you dispensing of your junk or stuff or whatever, doing it as responsibly as possible will also be as cheaply as possible, because given the rate that landfills and things of that nature, and for that matter, thrift stores are just filled to the gills, it's not as simple of an idea to just say, oh, I'll just give it away to Goodwill. A lot of those Goodwill stores are packed and they don't want it, which leaves you then your landfill. And landfills are becoming more and more expensive to deposit in, et cetera, et cetera. Not to mention the amount of garbage in the human race is, you know, getting beyond the pale. So how you do things and and the way you were talking about distributing things back to people is that notion, and some of you have heard it this year, called, I believe it's called the Swedish death cleaning. It is literally give things away to those people that you know would value from them now while you're alive, not in your will. Do it now. And there is a real benefit in that, because not only then are you living that love orientation in a very meaningful way, but you are also opening your heart when you want to give. And in wanting to give like that, it is inspirational and vibrationally uplifting to everyone. Not to mention, it opens up space in your life. So, all right. Karen, you were next. Karen Willett. And then Russ was after that. So go ahead, Karen.
I guess I have two things. Well, the first thing, dealing with AI, it's funny, you know, a couple of years ago, we did channeling with Troy, where we went into like a future lifetime, like 200 years in the future. And Michael's going to be channeled through AI. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't use physical channels anymore. It was actually an AI generated channel. So it's not going to go away anywhere. And I also think part of the channeling at some point came through that my entity, which is entity Kadra 1, entity 5, works with AI. I don't know if it becomes sentient centuries down the road. I'm not quite sure if I remember the channeling, but it's technology is not going away anywhere, unfortunately.
It's not so much that AI is going to become sentient in a spiritual sense. It's more like it's going to become so diversely, its processing power is going to become so diversified, especially with quantum computing, that it'll be trans-dimensional. And therefore, we and other entities will be able to enter into that circuitry vis-a-vis quantum tunneling. And in doing that, then, yeah, you're right, it becomes the speaker. Because also it will have a far better and far sorted vocabulary than do any of the human channels have. Human channels, even if they're particularly loquacious or eloquent, still have a limitation to the wiring of, you know, their experience, their vocabulary, etc. And of course, that's what fuzzy logic is, you know, probing into a computer science realm, right? But the real key is, again, how humanity is using it now. Can it become a companion and a reflection of the expanded mind of potential of humanity? Or does a small group of humanity so constrict it and create systems that the rest of humanity are essentially conditioned down into convenience, ignorance, entertainment, all of which classify under, you know, diminished capacity. And with that, then, you have an overall state of the, you know, old souls can still come into, you know, people who are dumb. You've had old souls, as far back on this planet. But seriously, and by dumb, we don't mean that their intellect is damaged. We just mean dumb that they have very little knowledge and are immersed in great conditioning. You know, in the first soul age species that we did here were the Neanderthals, and they didn't have a lot of technology, but we, you know, they had the complete infant to old soul cycle. And then when the transition happened to convert over to the Homo sapiens, there were many, you know, old soul Neanderthals who helped make that transition for that, you know, race that then took over, right? So the same thing is true. Even in 100 years from now, if all of you are unfortunately, say, like the victims of a bad movie, the bad movie might be like, you know, Fritz Lang's Metropolis, if you're aware of that subclass of that movie that's now almost 100 years old, what's his name, the Star Wars fellow, George
Lucas.
Lucas, thank you. His original film, THX 1138, see these. See how these groups are portrayed. See how H.G. Wells portrayed the Eloi and the Morlocks in, you know, The Time Machine. Stay away from television altogether. Yeah, that's true to a degree, Joe, in that television tends to be a very passive medium, even if it's really interesting information. Because you're not doing it. You know, one of the things we said at the beginning of this year is to helping, especially a lot of you are in, you know, and again, third chapter, is reading is much better for your brain than watching even the most stimulating television or movies or what have you, because your brain has to actively interpolate words, letters, symbols, and create inner holographic representations. That's way more active than somebody portraying the dialogue, the images, you know, and then even through the speakers, you know, essentially manipulate, you know, a lot of your passive reactions without your consent and without you even necessarily paying attention, right? So all of these things are the kind of challenges and hurdles that are right in front of people that only awareness and bringing things out of the subconscious, oh, well, everybody knows that, into the, we have to name these things and then address them, kind of stepping stone between the young into the mature soul era that is happening right now. So Karen, did you have anything else? Thank you.
Actually, I want to chime in on that just because, yes, I have a teenage niece and nephew. That generation also doesn't like to read.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
It was something from my nephew, and I was like, I think it was Christmas or his birthday. I'm like, you know, would he like a book? Because he's really into filmmaking. She's like, he doesn't like to read. They don't read. They're used to seeing images and anything on a screen and visual. It's just, I'm like, I don't get books for anybody that's
right,
you know, under 40, I feel.
Well, our comment on that is, remember earlier how we said that one of the big scary things that humans have to pay attention to is the human mind is trying to ramp up to machine speed efficiency. And it is not healthy, it is not useful, and it collapses things into two dimensions. A person who's on that level of high, it's really hard for them to meditate, let alone read, because they're trying to digest things so quickly. The only way that they can get into those expanded states is slowing it down. And reading is slowing it down to human level understanding. Even people who are, quote, fast readers, still, they have to do that interpolation, and it's a slower process than watching everything delivered to you and your visual cortex just, it's not really understanding it, it's just imprinting it, you know? And that's a big difference. That's a big difference. That's the difference between the idea of information and knowledge. So Russ, and then back to Janaea, and then—
Okay, one more quick thing.
Oh yes, go ahead.
It's funny, I guess we're talking about purging, and I've been like really I've been organizing my stuff into different spots. But then, I don't know if any of you can relate, I have a bag full of freaking cords. I don't know where they go. I don't know what to do with all this. I don't know if you guys can relate. Like I have tables, Like, and I'm afraid as soon as I throw it away, I'm going to be like, oh my God, that was the cable. And
recycle.
Just, you know, the 21st century problems when you're trying to purge. All right.
That's an apt way of putting it. It's a 21st century problem. Jillian uses a phrase that is a very apt one. It's a privileged person's problem to have kind of a much abundant duplication of things that, you know, in this level of technology, because, you know, the first world of approximately 2 billion people have it, but there's still, you know, a better than, you know, 4 billion people who, you know, really have to struggle to get this stuff. But even though it's becoming more consumer available to them, so is the amount of waste and refuse that's happening. Okay.
Yeah, so I have to tag all my little cords now because I don't know which one goes to which. I have so many that I have little tags now so they know what goes to what.
And that's
kind of sad. You're right. It is really privileged and ridiculously wasteful.
Yes.
They should have like a universal one or something.
Yes. And of course, that would require a cooperation amongst corporations that are vying for their standard to make them a bigger buck, or the imposition of regulation by governments, which we know capitalists absolutely hate because they benefit the consumers. And consumers are the enemy of capitalists, believe it or not. Why? Because those consumers who actually want rights like citizens will impede, according to the capitalist mindset, their ability to make profit.
I think iPhones have a different kind of plug now, or a different kind of port, because I've been hearing that you can't use a regular USB port now for the new iPhones or something.
There's any number of ways that planned obsolescence has become more accelerated. So thank you for that comment. And Janiyah now is going to make yet another one, I think. Thank you, Nan. Good night. Oh, she's already gone. All right. So
I want to go back to and ask Michael the notion of increasing our human and human connections as opposed to the, and that is my, any of their comments on the effects of the masking mandates, particularly on children and schools. I'm reading about their inability to be able to learn visual cues, you know, reading lips, learning emotional expression, because that mask is hiding so much of what we as humans need to learn nonverbal communication, where all the emotions are expressed in what, something like 80% of the communication. Has Michael got anything to say about how that's affecting young people? I'm going to healthcare workers, whoever, who've had to suffer under those mandates.
Many of the children that have been coming in the last 20 years are already neurodivergent. And that neurodivergence in itself represents a biological, historic, evolutionary changeover to the way that humans are wired. Mask mandates in and of themselves are not the hugest problem. The tendency for a lack of interaction with other kids, co-participation with kids with each other, and the ridiculous, in the first world, the ridiculous hovering of the so-called helicopter parent are probably more large-scale impediments to children learning the skills of being with each other than you know, just a face mask. Because you know what kids also do? They go like this. oh yeah, and then they put it back on. Kids are not so obedient, you know, in the sense of fearful in the sense of doing things themselves. It's the fact that they have the Gen X millennials and a lot of baby boomers were hovering parents, not wanting to repeat the traumas of their childhoods, right? And as a result, kids are not near as free as they once were. And we don't mean just to wear masks. I mean in the range of things that they're allowed to just explore on their own. And with neurodivergence, the great news and the interesting news is the neurodivergence that is really prevalent in the millennials and Gen Zs, again, an evolutionary thing, not just a social thing, but an evolutionary thing. They're seeking each other out. So they're learning an entirely new way of interacting. The masks in and of themselves, you know, may for some group of them camouflage and lessen some of the exposure, but the greater lessening of exposure were the fact that kids were home and couldn't see each other on a regular basis. They couldn't wrestle around. The unfortunate part about it is that this is not the last pandemic. You know, humankind has, you know, messed with nature a lot, such that, you know, the natural ebbs and flows of disease vectors are on the increase. I mean, right now, COVID is still a pandemic. People just aren't giving as much of a shit, if to be blunt about it. And there has been enough of a vaccination, inoculation, as they used to call them, against so many of the variants. And with Paxlovid, you know, the antivirals, many people are saying, hey, it's fine. If I get it, you know, I can weather it. And to a degree, there's truth in that. So they're going through the evolutionary process of dealing with and evolving, you know, in and parallel to the diseases that surround them. So we don't worry so much from that standpoint, but we would say that there is probably more difficulty for your generation and a lot of older, people over 50 to have acceptance for the younger kids and a lot of their new way of being, because it's light years already turning into light years beyond most of what you guys are. We applaud the younger generations. They are so brave to come into this world at this time. And, you know, the reason we say that is because it's even many folks who claim to be growth and love oriented and all the rest of this stuff still put down millennials all over the place. And we just say, excuse me, baby boomer, you got to take a look in your own closet and see what you guys ushered in, you know, and so forth. Concern is one thing, you know, contempt is another. So thank you. That was an excellent question. Gene, we see you waving your hand and we know we can imagine who you're going to talk about.
Well, as a Gen Xer who is the parent to a Gen Zer,
right.
These young people are amazing, and I feel the need to step in and speak for them. They are not who we were, and they are not who we think they should be, but that doesn't mean that they are not good and smart and kind and thoughtful and light years ahead of us. Just to speak for my daughter, she and her cohorts are amazingly attentive and aware of what is going on around them in ways that I was not, and the people ahead of me were not. And I have to say that it was the parents when she was growing up, who were the problem? It wasn't her generation. So it was the parents who were saying, they're not doing it the way I did it, therefore it's bad. And it wasn't bad, it was different. And to me, it was better on a lot of levels. And I have to say that they just don't read the way we think they should read, maybe is the way to put it. And they watch TV and movies in way more critical ways than we ever did. And I am a PhD in performance studies, meaning I have been trained in how to read performance and TV and film. So I just have to say that little kids who are having to deal with these mask mandates, it's just part of life. They're like, hey, it saves people's lives. That's the way it is. Everyone's doing it. I'm just going to do it. They don't have the resistance to change that our generation and the generations above me had. And I found this for when my daughter has a peanut allergy. It's a life-threatening peanut allergy. And when you told the kids this, they were like, okay, done. No peanuts for me. I'm not going to eat peanuts because they can hurt Eleanor. But the parents insisted on sending their kids to school with peanut butter and jelly because that was what they did and they liked it. So I just want to say that I think it would be useful for us older folk to maybe look at the younger generations with different eyes and accept them where they are versus where we think they should be. Because I think they are actually extraordinarily wise and extraordinarily kind and way above at least me in terms of where I'm hoping humanity will go. And that's my TED talk. Thank you.
A lovely Gene talk. Lovely. And thank you for being their advocate. We hope that as you folks enter this third chapter, more of you can turn to their advocacy. Because you can see that part of the of particularly the baby boom generation, but unfortunately a large segment of the Gen Xer generation that is running the world, that like and want the power, and these younger generations, they are being left with a plate load of problems to deal with. And so to the degree to which we said they were brave is because these souls who inhabited those bodies knew that they were coming into this, and it was pretty, pretty daunting, but they came anyway. And so the way that you can all support them is through being that kind of advocate and so forth. Gene, you have a follow-up statement.
Oh, I do. I just wanted to say in terms of, I don't know if you, who here is hooked into the ET community, but that is a community that I am involved with. And the ETs have talked about how souls here on Earth are actually the superstars of the soul realm, because being on Earth is particularly hard as a soul cycle versus being on any other planet. So all of us, plus the young folks, we all signed up for a pretty hard assignment. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. we're superstars, man, just being here. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And I appreciate the follow-up. And I just want to acknowledge Karen, thinking at it in an academic way, do we get extra credit, for being the superstars? Three stars, Joe says. Okay, good. In any case, it is interesting because, this even the moderate philosopher or scientist would say, you are all winners. First of all, your sperm made it to the egg. Then it stayed an entire pregnancy. Then it survived birth. Then it survived childhood. And considering the millions and millions and millions of numbers that didn't, you're one of the winners. And so with that, ladies and gentlemen, it is just about closing time, and I don't see any more raised hands. So we will part on that note that you are all the winners. And we hope that you share those blessings in the remainder of this year and the remainder of your lives, and you keep writing that third chapter with the best flourishes that you can possibly have in your imaginations. So we will say goodnight to you all. Thank you very much for coming, and we will put these get these recordings edited and put them up on the website for you if you wish to return to listen to them. So also what I will do is I will extract the visualization of any of you like that, so you can redo it in case you want a little extra bump and don't have to listen to the entire recording. So again, thank you everyone for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Thank you. Thanks, Michael.
Good to see you, everybody. Thank
you. And as Molly Shannon would say, superstar.
Yes, absolutely. Good old Molly. What greatness he is. By the Gen way, X.
Thanks, Easter Bunny. Bok, bok. Do you remember that?
All right, everyone. Night. Have a good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Bye. Bye.